Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Environmentally friendly paint, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me in the studio today, along with my co-host, Maria. We're looking at the second part of our July innovation article titled Helping the Planet with Clothing and Paint. Hi, Maria.
Hello, everyone. So, yesterday, as Simon just said in the title again, we were talking about clothing and the different fabrics and how to remove the blending element and just simplifying it so that then it's easier broken down and recycled.
It was kind of a process that was worthy of note, I think, because when we think of clothing and paint, we generally don't think of things that are environmentally friendly. We think of things that are necessary, but things that do have a kind of bad environmental reputation. And so what we really saw yesterday with the clothing thing was sort of a change in the material science that allowed the material to not be mixed with other types of fabrics, right? And it was that mixing that made it difficult to recycle.
Yes, and it was that mixing and the different types of materials that would melt at different temperatures and then clog up or just keep the machines from being able to do its job. So, and I think it's also interesting that this man, the co-founder and the chief technology officer of the startup, that he started off as a protein chemist. So it wasn't like he was in the fashion industry or in clothing, but he used his original career to launch him then into materials and trying to make it environmentally friendly.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the approach to helping the environment yesterday was an approach that dealt with the material being used. And so they changed the material being used so that the entire thing could be more readily or easily recycled after the clothing was used. So, that's one approach to making things more environmentally friendly. Today, with the paint, I think they're taking a different approach. They're not so much working on changing the process of or improving the environmental friendliness of the process of making the paint. They're making paint that is better suited for achieving environmental goals with things like buildings,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. So then it's like one thing, just paint, that can serve different purposes and also, I guess, reduce like the need for the creation of other things.
So the paint itself may not be super environmentally friendly today, but it's doing things like, lowering the amount of electricity required by a building, or they're achieving other goals. That's kind of the idea. So a different approach than we saw yesterday, but nonetheless an approach that seeks to make things, more environmentally sustainable, I suppose would be the way to say it, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the lesson title for today is a paint that collects water.
Yeah, normally we don't think of paint as being able to do that.
Yeah.
Well, paint, of course, is that thing that you put over, that wet liquid thing you put over things, and then when it dries up, it has a different color. It can maybe make something waterproof. But this is
I tend to want paint to repel water, get rid of water, right? Keep water out of things.
To make things waterproof. And so you
if you put a certain paint on the outside of your house, it's because you don't want water getting from the outside of the house into the house, right?
I didn't realize that was one of the reasons for having paint, but that is.
Well, you just want to protect the material, right?
Exactly.
And if it's sucking water in, water is the big damager of a lot of properties, right?
Water mentioned
mold, things like that.
Yeah.
Humidity.
But you said sucking the water in, but I don't think that's what this paint does. It collects the water.
Where does it put it? We're going to have to read and find out. Listeners, we're going to do two readings today. I hope you have your magazine with you to optimize your learning experience. If you do not have the magazine with you, I would encourage you to get one, not only because it will help you learn, but also because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. We're going to do two readings, like I said. We're going to ask Linda to do the first of those readings for us now.
A paint that collects water. With little more than a coat of paint, buildings could soon make the air around them cooler and harvest gallons of water directly from the atmosphere. Researchers at the University of Sydney in Australia have created a nano-engineered polymer coating that passively cools building surfaces while enabling them to collect water like dew-coated leaves. It's a material solution that could help combat rising heat and water insecurity in places all over the world. The white coating, a porous paint-like material, reflects up to 97% of sunlight and radiates heat, making surfaces up to 10 degrees cooler than the surrounding air, even under direct sun. This cooler condition allows water vapor in the air to condense like dew on the smooth coating surface, where it can be collected. In a recent test, a roughly 10 square foot area treated with the coating was able to harvest 1.6 cups of water over the course of a single day.
This is interesting, Maria, but I still have no idea where they're collecting this water.
Well, I think you mean you do know where they're collecting the water, but how they're collecting it and then where this water goes, how it's cleaned, is not very clear in the paragraph that we just read.
Oddly enough, I have a sense of how it's sort of collecting the water because of some of the words they've used. But I don't, you know, are they sucking the water up? Are they directing the water to flow into a tank? We still don't know about this. But there are a few other things that this is doing, not just water related. You know, I don't know about the home you live in, but one of the major issues that I sort of have living, I guess, where we do on the globe is that it's very hard to control the temperature in the house.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Because then, like, in the summertime, it gets very hot. In the wintertime, it's very cold. And I know that the house that I live in has many windows, so the air circulation,
it's like
keeps
you're losing your air conditioning out of the windows.
Well, yeah, there is that. But yeah. I realize that I'm much better off than some people whose house barely even has one window,
yeah,
where then it does not allow as much air circulation. And so they would have to rely much more on air conditioning rather than just the natural airflow into the house.
One of the things I have always found frustrating is, you know, waking up in the morning, hopping out of bed, feeling like it's a certain temperature, getting dressed, and then walking out of the house to discover it's a totally different temperature than it was in the house.
That happened to me enough times that now I've learned my lesson to always look at the temperature app on my phone to see if that day will be sunny or not. Because you can never tell. Sometimes I walk out the door of my house and I still think, oh, it's a good thing I put on my jacket. But then after I kind of exit this small lane and the different buildings and I get out into the actual open road, then I'm like, oh man, I did not dress for this weather.
Okay, there's this other thing I've seen. Like during hot days in the city, sometimes you see city trucks full of water driving down the road, dumping water on the road.
Have
you noticed this?
I don't recall ever seeing that. Or are you referring to like the ones that drive by and they like spray water? Because I thought
the ground. They're just putting it on the road. They seem to do it because, you know, our roads are black, right?
Yeah.
So they're collecting heat on hot days. And they do it to cool down the city because it makes it harder to air condition your house when the environment outside your house is kind of trapping heat. I think that's kind of the idea. So it's sort of a physical move that's being made to help control the climate around us. And I would put this paint in that same kind of category.
That's a good point because just like they would dump water on the black pavement in order to cool it off, the paint that we're talking about is it makes the water kind of stick to it in a way.
Well, you think about that. It cools off. So it's like you've got the cost of air conditioning, let alone all of that is going into producing the electricity to support the air conditioning. You got people driving tanker trucks down the road, spraying water on the street.
Just trying to cool everything down.
All of these things we're trying to do. And what they tell us at the beginning of this reading is that with little more than a coat of paint, buildings could soon make the air around them cooler. So that's the part that caught my attention right there. And then there's this part we've been talking about, as well as harvesting gallons of water directly from the atmosphere. So I thought that was interesting. Add a coat of paint, and it's almost like magic. The environment is cooled.
Kind of lower the general temperature in the air.
Yeah. So researchers at the University of Sydney in Australia, tells us, have created a nano-engineered polymer. Now, I can tell you what a polymer is. It's basically like a chain of atoms. They have some unique characteristics, like they slide past each other very easily. So we tend to think of them as like, actually, they're pretty handy in materials science. But I think that is the key to directing water here, the polymers. But they use this other term, nano-engineered. I thought I'd ask you about that. Can you tell our listeners what nano-engineering is?
Yeah, friends, don't worry if you've never heard this term before. I'm sure Simon has. This was my first time hearing this term. Engineer, we obviously know what that is. And nano-engineering is the engineering field that is focused on the study, development, and improvement of materials, but not on a very big scale, on a small scale, working on improving those things.
Okay. So basically, they've developed this coating. They've engineered this coating. And what it does is it passively cools building surfaces. When we say passively, it means it's not doing anything.
Yeah. So it's not like an air conditioning unit that's just like
making cold air or something. Yeah. It's just sitting there. And in the process of being there, it is cooling the building surface. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when I was a kid and I would get up in the morning and go outside and walk across the grass, my feet would get all wet.
Yeah, that's from the dew, right? On the grass.
So how does dew form? Well, it's the same way as like when you take a glass of water and you bring it outside on a hot day and soon it has what we call condensation. Water all around the outside. So how do we do this? Well, you get a cool surface, a surface that is cooler than the air around it, and water from the air around it is going to transfer to the cooler surface, and it's going to condense, so form water droplets that can move. And so this collects water because it is cooler.
Yeah.
So it's cooling the environment around it, and in so doing, it makes it able to capture water. But we still have that question, what do we do with it?
Yeah, because it's like, if it's like the dew that we're thinking of with the dew-coated leaves or the dew-coated grass, then it means to the touch, the wall would be wet.
That's right. So the condensation is on the wall because the wall is cooler. Okay, so as we move forward here with the nano-engineering, that's how it's keeping things cool, and that's how it is collecting water. The material solution could help combat rising heat and water insecurity in places all over the world. You know what insecurity is, right? It's when you don't feel secure. You don't have security.
Because you don't have something or you lack something. Or
you're
never know.
Safe.
Yeah, you never know when you will have it or not. And so you are always worrying about it.
We talk a lot about water insecurity. Because we go through times of not having enough water or shortages of water, right? So we hear about this term a lot, but we don't hear so much about heat insecurity. What would you say heat insecurity is? Temperature insecurity?
Yeah, well, that would be for those who they never know when they're going to feel warm enough or cool enough. But we don't really use that term a whole lot.
Yeah, one of the things that really surprised me when I first moved to Taipei was that every time the weather got cold, there would be all these stories about people having like heart problems and being rushed to hospitals and all kinds of medical consequences. And I was like, what is going on? Because it's, you know, it's not like I grew up in Canada where the weather gets like, you know, it's like minus 10 degrees Celsius. And it would be like 10 degrees Celsius here and causing these problems. And I was like, what is going on? But then it occurred to me, we don't really use climate controlling of our houses.
Yeah, so, no, I think it's a fluctuating weather, and then the temperature goes up, rises up, and then goes down real rapidly.
Well, and more to the point, like people think, you know, they'll sort of say when they find out you're a Canadian, like, oh, like, do you feel cold? You can't feel cold. Like, you're Canadian. It's much colder in Canada. But what I think people don't realize about Canadians is Canadians spend very little of their lives in extreme cold temperatures. Like, we're in heated, insulated houses. We can push a button on our car to start it up and start it heating. So it's warm, and then we run out the door and down the sidewalk to the car, and we jump in a warm car, and then we drive in the warm car to our warm office or whatever, right?
Yeah, and even better if you have it parked in the garage, then you don't have to deal with all that unless you have to shovel the snow. But that's, I do, right, see your point.
But even then, you own all of this sort of, it's fairly expensive, but it lasts a long time. It's basically like climate-appropriate clothing. Like, you own these clothes that keep you warm in extreme cold temperatures, things like that. Special winter boots and pants and jackets, things like that.
Yeah.
But if you live in a place where it's not normally cold like that, you're not going to be equipped with any of that stuff. And that leaves you very vulnerable when the weather gets cold quickly, like you said, right?
Yeah, because it's also hard to tell sometimes, like, when the weather will just all of a sudden take a turn and it's going to be freezing and then all of a sudden be hot again.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict.
Now, last summer when I went to Canada, it was hot for a number of days, like, you know, in the 30s hot. Canadian summers, they might get up, you know, 32 degrees, but usually it's kind of like a 27, 28, I would say. And when I was in Canada last summer and it was hot, there were all these news stories about people basically being rushed to the hospital because Canadian homes don't always have air conditioning.
Oh, no.
Isn't that wild?
Well, you know what they need? They need this paint that we're talking about today.
Well, this is, so the point being, as climate becomes more volatile and fluctuates more, you know, which is one of the things they say climate change is going to cause, it means more and more people are going to be climate insecure. And so this paint, you know, it's kind of a way of keeping everything even, of controlling for some of the excesses so things don't get too crazy hot, right?
Yeah, well, that's a great lead-in because this paint, it's...
Tell us about the white coating.
Yeah, it's porous paint-like material. And our friends have probably heard of the word pore, which is like a hole where it's like breathable air.
Like Swiss cheese. You know, the picture of cheese with the holes in it?
Yes.
Those are pores, right?
Exactly. And so porous describes this material as having those pores or pore-like material. And so what it does is it reflects up to 97% of sunlight and radiates heat, which reflects heat, making surfaces up to 10 degrees cooler than the surrounding air, even under direct sun.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is.
I remember one of the big lessons I learned here was the value of shade, because when your summers are like 27 degrees, like, it's not that big a difference. But here, like, shade makes it a lot cooler than being out in direct sunlight, right? And so it's just another tool in the toolbox to help keep us all from being in extreme heat situations, I suppose. Up to 10 degrees cooler than the surrounding air, even under direct sunlight. So this cooler condition allows the water vapor in the air to condense like dew on the smooth coating surface, where it can be collected. They're not telling us how yet. You know how I imagine it being collected?
Oh, no, let's hear it.
So there's this word, Canadians call them eaves troughs.
Oh, I know
Americans
what you're talking
call
about.
Call them gutters.
Okay.
You
it's
know
like
what
this
they are?
Like long thing where then the water will like drip down and then it will
It's like on the edge of a roof,
downward.
Right? So it's like the rain comes off the roof and it goes into this kind of long, it's like half a pipe, basically.
Right.
The water goes in it and it gets directed and then it comes down into.
Yeah.
And I imagine you could do that just by having some sort of collection thing at the bottom of the wall. Because the water will run down the wall, right?
Yeah, and then have it have a a slightly downward tilt. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could have it pour into a, there's a word cistern, C-I-C-S-T-E-R-N?
I think it's spelled with an S.
Yeah. Nonetheless, a cistern is like an underground water tank. It starts with a C. I'm sure our listeners are well equipped to Google it, better equipped than we are, as it turns out. But anyway, I think you could collect it fairly easily like that. And they're basically saying that a roughly 10-foot square area, so I think of that as like, you know, 3 meters on the side, but that's the square area. So this might be more like a meter by a meter.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this area was able to harvest 1.6 cups of water over the course of a single day. It's not a lot.
Not too much, but if you think like, you know, you have a building like the size of the office building we're in for every meter is collecting a cup a day, like that'll add up. You could flush toilets with that, you know, or
drink some of that water.
Yeah, it's not nothing. And when you consider that I think the real goal here is temperature control. Mm-hmm. Then this is sort of the secondary
like a bonus,
function.
Right?
The bonus, yeah, if you will. So there we go. That brings us to our second reading, From Buildings to Playgrounds. Let's do that together now.
From Buildings to Playgrounds. This research was led by Chiara Nato, a professor at the University of Sydney's Nano Institute and School of Chemistry. Nato is also co-founder of a startup that's commercializing this coating called Dewpoint Innovations. Our main goal in designing this new material is to address water scarcity, providing a sustainable and delocalized source of water that is entirely passive, she says. Solar reflective paint is hardly new to the world of sustainability, and it's been used widely to reduce heat gain on everything from buildings to UPS trucks to playgrounds. This new coating builds on those applications by taking more advantage of the cooler air produced by bouncing heat off a building, creating a surface onto which water vapor can condense in the cooler ambient temperatures. The coating's porous nature makes it more durable than typical reflective paints, which enables it to better collect dew than other surface coverings that quickly degrade.
All right. Well, you know, we clearly got this wrong. You know, we were just saying we thought this was all about climate control, but then we're living on an island where there's like a lot of rain, right? If you're living in Australia, which is notoriously dry,
very hot.
Maybe the water, that 1.5 cups of water, 1.6 cups of water might be a big difference, I suppose.
Yeah, it could be. And like you were saying, depending on the size of the building, it could really make a difference in how much water you're able to collect.
Well, you know, because to us, the climate control was the appeal. But very clearly in this first paragraph, he says, our main goal in designing this new material is to address water scarcity. So they're looking for a way to collect water.
I guess then it depends on like the need.
Yeah.
So for different countries who want the air to be cooler around them, maybe they don't want to rely on air conditioning that much, then this would really appeal to them because of that. And then for places where water is more scarce, then that would be the appeal.
Well, you can see that in the name. So basically, they've commercialized this research. So it comes from the university, but they've set up a company to sort of promote the material. It's called Dewpoint Innovations. And a dew point is the temperature, which it changes depending on the situation, but it's the temperature where water basically becomes rain.
Yeah, like
right?
little
Turns
water
into
droplets.
Water from vapor in the air. So even the name of the company reflects the idea that water is the key thing here. Solar reflective paint, I'm looking at the second paragraph now, is hardly new to the world of sustainability. So maybe the emphasis on the water here is because this is not a new idea to have paint that helps control the climate.
Yeah, so that's something that I did not know about paint before.
Yeah.
That paint on buildings, they're created with one of the functions being able to deflect the heat. So think about how like black cars, the color black, it really soaks in the heat and makes it much hotter. At least I've heard people explain it that way before.
Yeah.
But here we have paints being a way to deflect the heat, to reflect it so that the heat doesn't just penetrate through and into a building or into a vehicle.
It makes sense though, right?
The black.
Like we've known, for example, for many years that colors affect how hot you're going to feel. Like don't wear black clothes on a hot day.
Yes.
Right? Don't wear white after Labor Day is a classic rule, right? Because it's colder after Labor Day.
Oh, yeah.
So they tell us not to wear white, which is for hotter weather, right? So we've kind of known that. So, of course, that's also going to be true for paint, color of cars, like you mentioned, you know. So anyway, it's not a new idea. It's been used widely to reduce heat gain on everything from buildings to UPS trucks to playgrounds. This new coating builds on those applications by taking more advantage of the cooler air produced by bouncing heat off a building to basically catch this water. So the words they use here are to create a surface which water vapor can condense on in cooler ambient temperature. So as things cool down, you're going to catch more water.
Yeah, so it's like a process. It leads up to something. Without the cooler air, then having the water vapor on the surfaces would not be possible. So they take advantage of the cooler air, which they try to use it in their favor. And, of course, that's produced by bouncing heat off a building. So that's where the heat is able to be reflected off of or deflected from the building, where then the surface can have the water vapor on it to cool the temperature.
Listeners, that brings us to the end of our time for today, but it does not bring us to the end of this lesson. Join us again tomorrow as we continue talking about the paint that collects water. Until then, I'm Simon.
And I'm Maria.
Saying bye for now.
Goodbye.